Well, welcome back to our Bible study, and I apologize for the delay. I was in quarantine for 2 weeks, and so our daughter tested positive for COVID and didn't have hardly any symptoms or anything like that. But of course, we had to quarantine because of that, and so I hated that we were right at the end of Esther, and then I had to take 2 weeks off. And so we're going to finish this up here before Thanksgiving. And so I appreciate your patience and just praise the Lord that things went well. She had very little symptoms, just very tired, but no fever, no aches, no coughing, none of that kind of thing. And so if she had to get it, it was a best case scenario that she was pretty low symptoms, very mild symptoms. And so anyway, we're going to dive back into Esther chapter 9 today. And so if you remember where we left off, the edict had been reversed against the Jews now. In the last video, we talked about how Mordecai went out in the royal robes and in the crown. And we talked about how God, by God's grace, and for us as believers on this side of the cross, because of Jesus's sacrifice, our lives have been reversed now, and we are clothed in his righteousness. We are victors, not victims. And so that's the last thing that we talked about, which now is 2 weeks ago. And so we're going to jump into chapter 9, and this is kind of the end of the story here. And so all of this has been going on. Everything that's been leading up to this has just been suspense. It's been cliffhangers, like what's going to happen. And then look at what happens in chapter 9, how the author writes this in verse number 1. It says, "Now in the 12th month, which is the month of Adar, on the 13th day of the very day when the enemies of the Jews hoped to gain the mastery over them, the reverse occurred. The Jews gained mastery over those who hated them." And so all the way through this book, it's been like, what's going to happen? You know, everything's leading up, and it's always like, man, it's just getting worse and worse. It's going from bad to worse and worse and worse. And so we're just wondering what's going to happen. But then after chapter 8, when the Jews now have been saved, the author just tells us right up front in the first verse of chapter 9 that the reverse happens. Like there is no cliffhanger here. It's just, this is what's going to happen, and then the rest of this is going to tell us exactly how that carried out. But notice, they don't want us to think that there's ever any doubt about what's going to happen. And so look at verse 2. It says, "The Jews gathered in their cities throughout all the provinces of King Ahasuerus to lay hands on those who sought their harm, and no one could stand against them, for the fear of them had fallen on all peoples. All the officials of the provinces and the satraps and the governors and the royal agents also helped the Jews, for the fear of Mordecai had fallen on them. For Mordecai was great in the king's house, and his fame spread throughout all the provinces, for the man Mordecai grew more and more powerful." And remember, this is just all God's grace that's doing this. Don't miss this, that God is working through Mordecai here and is bringing fear to everybody, to the point where it's bringing even the people that are not Jews onto their side, because they want to support him, and really they're afraid of him. It would seem like some of them are. So verse 5, it says, "The Jews struck all their enemies with the sword, killing and destroying them, and did as they pleased to those who hated them." We're going to talk about that in a minute. "In Susa, the citadel itself, the Jews killed and destroyed 500 men, and also killed Parshantha and Dalphon and Aspatha and Poratha and Adelia and Aridatha and Parmashta and Arisai and Aridai and Vazatha, the 10 sons of Haman, the son of Hamatha, the enemy of the Jews, but they laid no hands on the plunder." So now notice what's going on here. The Jews are killing these people, but don't miss this, that it's people that were coming after them. They're not just knocking on doors and killing people and killing women and children. They're not doing anything like that. What it's saying is that they're killing men that were coming after them. They killed the sons of Haman, who apparently came after them. Because remember, Haman hated the Jews. So Haman had rallied all those who also were like him against the Jews, had rallied them to, hey, on the 13th day of the 12th month, we're going after the Jews. So all these people, yes, the Jews are killing people, but it's people that came against them. It's people that hated them. It's people that wanted to kill them. So this is self-defense, okay? So sometimes people, skeptics and things like that, will try to talk about the wars in the Old Testament and how could God, you know, promote something that looks like genocide and things like that. But what we have to understand is this is not just man going after them. This is God's will to protect his people. And so the killing that's going on here is not murder. They're not breaking commandments. This is self-defense here. Okay. But notice at the end of verse 10, it says, but they laid no hand on the plunder. Remember, Haman wanted to kill them and take all their stuff to enrich himself or to give it to the king so that he could get his way. But notice here, they're not interested in going after the stuff. They're not going, they're not doing this to try to enrich themselves. They're simply doing this to protect themselves, right? So notice verse 11, it says, that very day, the number of those killed in Susa, the citadel, was reported to the king. And the king said to Queen Esther, in Susa, the citadel, the Jews have killed and destroyed 500 men and also the 10 sons of Haman. What then have they done in the rest of the king's provinces? Now, what is your wish? It shall be granted you. And what further is your request, it shall be fulfilled. And Esther said, if it please the king, let the Jews who are in Susa be allowed tomorrow also to do according to this day's edict. And let the 10 sons of Haman be hanged on the gallows. So the king commanded this to be done, and a decree was issued in Susa, and the 10 sons of Haman were hanged. And the Jews who were in Susa gathered also on the 14th day of the month of Adar, and they killed 300 men in Susa, but they laid no hands on the plunder. So again, more people were coming after them, and the king allowed them to defend themselves another day. And we see that the 10 sons were hanged, and they defended themselves against 300 men. But again, they did not lay their hands on their stuff. They weren't interested in that. They're not going to allow that to become theirs. So they kept their hands off of that. And notice verse 16. It says, now the rest of the Jews who were in the king's provinces also gathered to defend their lives and got relief from their enemies and killed 75,000 of those who hated them, but they laid no hands on the plunder. Notice the unity here of we're not going after the stuff. Even in all the other provinces, the Jews killed more people that hated them. Remember, this is not them just knocking on the doors and killing people, but rather the ones who came after them, they defended themselves. But notice the unity. They said, we're not taking stuff. We're not trying to make this about us. It's not about getting something for us. Verse 17, it says, this was on the 13th day of the month of Adar, and on the 14th day they rested and made a day of feasting and gladness. But the Jews who were in Susa gathered on the 13th day and on the 14th day and rested, and on the 15th day, making that a day of feasting and gladness. Therefore, the Jews of the villages who live in the rural towns hold the 14th day of the month of Adar as a day for gladness and feasting, as a holiday, and as a day on which they send gifts of food to one another. So we're going to finish up and talk about what that day of feasting is. But what I want us to see is the same thing that we've been talking about through this entire chapter is really what happens in verse number 1 when it says everything that they had been waiting for. Imagine that. They had known about this for 12 months. Remember, it was the first of the year, the first month of the year, when Haman rolled that lot until he found out it was going to be the 13th day of the 12th month. And so that edict went out, and they knew for 11 months now that this day was coming. And the whole time, when we're reading this, we're wondering, okay, what's going to happen to save the Jews? Because it can't happen this way. And so everything's leading up to it. But then on the first verse of chapter 9, it says the reversal happened. Exactly what they were afraid of, it didn't happen. But instead, what God had allowed to happen is what happened. And they want us to see right up front that the end is never in doubt. And so what I want us to think about today with this is just thinking through this book. Okay, now I want to make this point before I say kind of what we should think about application wise or implication wise, is that the Bible's not about us. Okay, and I may have said that before, but the Bible is about God's story of redeeming his people through Jesus Christ. Okay, from creation, fall, redemption, restoration. That's what the book is about. Okay, that's the one story. God's the divine author through the many different human authors that he used. But that's the one story. Jesus is the hero. It's not about us. Okay, but if we think about the story of Esther, right, and we think about how God was working through the Jews, how God was going to work through Esther, even work through King Ahasuerus, work through Haman, work through Mordecai. If we think about it in that story, how God was taking these things, it just seemed like, man, it was getting worse and worse and worse, and things could just, how was God going to unravel what the evil Haman was doing? And then we see that God does. So if we think about in our life, right, we talked about how God is working behind the scenes providentially, and Romans 8:28, Genesis 50:20, where Joseph said to his brothers, you know, what you plan for evil, God worked it for good. So if we think about our life as a story of how God is working, the thing that we have to understand is as we're reading Esther, man, we don't know the end of the story. We don't know how it's going to work out. And certainly think about Esther, think about Mordecai. They were in the story. They didn't know how it was going to happen. But what the writer wants to show us here is that the end was never in doubt. God was not going to allow his people to be wiped out like that. He just wasn't. Even though it looked like that might be what happened, at the end, God reversed it because that's what he was always going to do. Even though his name is not there, he never stopped working for his people, right? And so we know the end of the story, but they didn't. I like to think about that a lot of times in the Old Testament and even in the New Testament. When Noah built the ark, he didn't know what was going to happen. When David stood up to Goliath, he didn't know what was going to happen. When Daniel prayed, even though it was against the law, when the three boys didn't bow to the statue of Nebuchadnezzar and they went into the furnace, when Daniel went into the lion's den, they didn't know what was going to happen. Esther and Mordecai didn't know what was going to happen. But we do because we know the end of the story, right? So in our lives, we have to understand that God's promises are true even when we don't see them. Even when it seems like things are just getting worse and worse and worse and worse. The question is will we trust his promises even when we don't see how it's going to come to pass? Even when it seems like everything is going the opposite of what it should, can we trust his promises that are in his word, even when it doesn't make sense? Because when we read Esther, the whole time we're like, how's this going to happen? What's going to happen? How's God going to do this? It's just getting bad to worse for the Jews. What's he going to do? Haman just seems to be getting promoted and getting more power. And what's he going to do? And it just seems like things are out of God's control. But in chapter 9, we see it was never out of his control. So can you and I, even when our life seems like it's out of control, even in 2020 with all the crazy things that are happening, can we trust his promises even when we don't see them playing out right now in our life? Can we trust that the end is settled, that God does win, that we will be redeemed, that we will be glorified, that we do have a home in heaven, that he is in control and he is still on the throne? That's really where our faith goes into action. Like, that's where the rubber meets the road, so to speak, is will we trust him even when maybe even our senses and the things that we see and the things we experience says, man, I don't know what God's doing. I don't even know how he's working, but yet I still trust him anyway. I think that's one of the things that we have to see in Esther, is trusting that he is working even when it doesn't seem like he is. Even when he's working behind the scenes, we can trust him. Or we can know that he's working behind the scenes, and that's why we can trust him. And so I think that's the thing that we need to remember, is that just like in Esther, the end was never in doubt. The end was never in doubt. And for us, if you know Christ today, the end is never in doubt. Yeah, the details of how we get there, they're going to look different, how God works that out in your life and in my life. But the end is never in doubt. If we know Him, we'll be in eternity with Him. And He's never going to leave us nor forsake us until we get there. And then guess what? When we get there, we're with Him for all eternity. So He never abandons us in this life or the next. And so I just want to challenge you today, and I don't know what's going on in your life right now. I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, or the next day, or the next month, or the next year. In 2021, who knows? But here's what I want us to be encouraged with today. It's that God is working behind the scenes in your life, just like He was in Esther. And the end is never in doubt. He is in control. And He's going to work it for your good and His glory. Even if evil people try to work against you, even if the things outside of our control, other people, other situations, on a global scale, like who knows? But God is still in control, and the end is never in doubt. And so I hope that that encourages you today, maybe gives you something to pray about. Maybe there's something that you're anxious about right now, and you're sitting there saying, God, I don't see you working. I don't see you working. But today, maybe we need to trust Him. Maybe we need to pray and say, God, I trust you with the end. Whatever it is, I trust you because the end is never in doubt. And so that's the answer to our anxiousness. That's the answer to our worry. That's the answer to that just uneasiness that we all experience. Because again, just like in Esther, we may not see Him working, but He is always working. And in your life and in mine, we may not always see Him working, but trust and know that He is working, and His promises that He's given us in His word are true. So maybe today you need to pray about that. But either way, I hope that you're encouraged by that, and that will help you as we face the rest of this year and the new year to come. God's in control. So God bless you. I'm so glad to be back, and we're going to finish this up here this in the next maybe one or two videos, but I'm looking forward to wrapping this up. So God bless you. I hope y'all have a great day, and we'll talk to you soon.